and welcome to this episode of the Postural Restoration Podcast. Today we have a guest that, quite frankly, we have been really excited to have on the podcast. And, you know, just due to how busy you've been and things in our timeline and things in your timeline, we're really excited to finally sit down with you, Jesse. We have Jesse Hamm here today. He is a Master's of Science in Physical Therapy, received that from the University of South Dakota. Jesse, you have a certification as a Mulligan practitioner, and I look forward to talking a little bit more about that. And then you're also a PRC. So again, Jesse, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, RJ.
Jesse, to start things off, you know, we really kind of keep it the same here with all the faculty and try to get to know you guys on a deeper level. But why don't we just start with those credentials that we mentioned, Jesse, and walk through those and kind of when and where and why those things happened and the route that got you to those things. Even before we get into your professional schooling, Jess, what in your early life or even childhood, if you want to go back that far, led you to think about the field of physical therapy and maybe just, you know, sports science or medicine, you know, in general, and what led you to become interested in that?
Yeah, it's a good question. Early on, I've always been a tinkerer. I like kind of solving problems and fixing things. And the more complex, the more interested I am. And so, basketball player, I can't put the basketball down. I'm 42. I still can't put it down. And one of the things as far as physical medicine and sports medicine that drew me to PT was I was kind of with my family and with some of my teammates, I was always the guy that was just poking around, researching, learning things as far as keeping people on the court and what to do when you, as the old school guys would say, turn an ankle or sprain an ankle, inversion sprain, or sprain a wrist or something in the middle of a game that might keep you out. Not very involved, and certainly wasn't considering things the way we do now, but it was something I liked to mess with and was always interested in getting people back out on the court. So that was probably what began the process. And then as things got further along, it was more interesting to me. Humans are more dynamic than other instruments and machines. So they're a lot more variable. So they're a lot more fun to deal with.
You almost have the similar standpoint. You know, my dad and others always mention, you know, there's another PRC that I can think of that comes to mind, but people that have kind of a mechanical engineering constructing type background that want to understand the mechanics behind movement. Did that occur as a player first, Jesse, or did you go through any injury yourself as a basketball player, or what was your first exposure to maybe rehab, if you will?
Yeah, it's there was a little bit of that. I'd say it was probably just midway through my freshman year. You know, when you're young, you don't really get hurt. You might think you were hurt, but it goes away within a week or two. And I was actually going up for a layup, and I got undercut, and I ended up landing kind of back on my left elbow, and didn't hurt terribly at the time, but. Ultimately had some symptoms, interscapular symptoms and up into my neck that were bothering me when I try and move around and play. And of course I'm in the Midwest, you know, we're not too far from the epicenter of chiropractic care. So that was kind of the starting point. My dad sent me to a really good chiropractor at the time. And I worked with him and, you know, we did some manips through the thorax and cervical spine. And it helped me, and then it would come back and help me and come back and slowly wean me off of that. It took about 6 months, and then I was discharged, and literally the next day I'm in South Dakota, so we can drive when we're 14, and I was driving, and I turned to look in the mirror, and the same symptoms came back just by turning my head. And so I went to the chiropractor, who was a good guy. I said, hey, you know, we just spent 6 months working on this thing, and I got a day of relief functionally. What, is there any way I can like work to keep this thing moving the way it was? Yeah. Can I keep that? How do I do that? And he says, oh, well, I've got a PT that I work with, which was really rare at the time. This is like 1990.
Yeah, for him to integrate at the time with the physical therapist.
Yeah, it was pretty rare. And of course, I didn't know that that was a thing. He said, hey, I've got a PT that works next door with me, and he'll take a look at you. Well, I went over to this PT, and he didn't do anything extravagant. He just kind of talked about the balance of chest wall to interscapular play, and it was a very gross but effective treatment strategy. And he ended up working with me for about 3 visits, and I've yet to go back. So part of the reason I've yet to go back is because I was trained with Mulligan practitioner and PRI, as you discussed earlier. But that was kind of my invite to PT. It said,
introduction,
yeah, like here's something that you might want to look into. So I was probably not quite 15.
And Jesse, before attending the University of South Dakota for the actual PT program, did you have other interests at the time? Were you raised? I mean, I'm not really familiar with your family history growing up. Did you have any physical therapists, any type of influence in those areas at that time in your life?
You know, my dad is one who would say he still wants to learn what he's going to do when he grows up. My dad's a very educated guy. He's a psychologist by trade at this point. But at that time, both my parents were teachers, both had master's degrees, and my dad ended up getting a doctorate degree. And I was always trained to learn. I mean, my dad taught me how to think and to learn. So I think that's one of the things I really have appreciated about PRI is that this is a crowd of thinkers. You know, as one of my favorite things, I mean, there's a lot of things that your dad speaks to that are really core to the things that I believe. And one of them is none of us are experts. We're all trying to figure out what's going on. And PRI just does a really good job of sorting through that. That's one of the principles that I was taught when I was young is that.
Yeah, just to be open-minded, and no matter what it was, you know, you knew how to pick it apart and determine whether it was for you or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, let's get into then, Jesse, the actual schooling. Obviously, you're in Rapid City now, but at the time, where did you grow up in South Dakota?
Well, I was actually raised, my early childhood was in a little town called Caputa. That's Caputa. And it's a little tiny town, just about 13 miles outside of Rapid City. So okay. There's about 65 people in the little town I was at. We built tree forts. Yeah.
So the university, you know, USD was the natural, you had to move across the state, you know, to the east side, but it was the natural choice for you.
Yeah. You know, there's kind of a long story to that. I've done a couple of different schooling ventures. I actually started out at Mayo Clinic, and I learned a little bit about places that are a little more antiseptic that may or may not necessarily fit some guys that grew up in a town of 65.
Yeah.
And there were some unique things there. I met a lot of good friends there. And my wife started out her nursing career there, but we ended up moving back to USD, and that's where I finished out my schooling.
Yeah, and that's I told you before we started, Jesse, that I'm looking forward to your story just because a lot of this information, for example, your time at Mayo Clinic or moving up to Minnesota, I'm assuming it was up in Rochester.
Yep.
And things like that I look forward to learning more. But as you mentioned, you ended up back at University of South Dakota and graduated in 2004. You mentioned your wife kind of being in nursing school at the time. Was she able to finish before moving back, or you guys kind of finished one degree before?
Yeah, starting? Sorry, I didn't mean to say nursing school. She was a nurse, and it was a good place for her to begin her practice. So she got her nursing.
She was actually practicing up there.
Yeah, yeah. She was. And we joke about it. She was sugar mama there while I was in school.
That's a commonality, I think, between many people, and it's not always spouse versus, you know, husband versus wife, but it's sometimes the wife is the breadwinner to pay for the school, and sometimes the husband pays for the school, but you're not alone.
Yeah, no, I'm sure not.
So I actually, last week, I was kind of going through this outline and looking at your history. I actually went in and asked Jen, you know, for more information about this Mulligan certification. And I've heard about it in the past, but it honestly is
one that I have heard less about than others. So I really am looking forward to you kind of telling us how and why you got involved with the Mulligan practitioner. I did get a chance to look further into them, and you know, they're well established all over the world, and I'm sure all of our listeners probably even know more about that than I do. But walk us through kind of how you became involved with that. It may coincide possibly with your first clinical exposure. You know, I know you accepted your first kind of clinical position probably before maybe getting that certification, but whatever route you'd like to take, but maybe just walk us through how you became involved with the Mulligan Institute.
Sure. Mulligan was one that we had gotten exposed to just a little bit in PT school, and you know, USD did a great job of giving us just a little bit of everything as far as school was concerned. They didn't try and teach us, you know, a great detail of anything, but we got a little bit of exposure to what the Mulligan concept was. And so when I was in PT school, I had a pretty good idea because of working in a clinic for about 3 years prior to school. I was kind of filling gaps in school, figuring out what I had missed from some really good mentors prior to going to school. And one of the things that that led me to the Mulligan concept or to the Mulligan practitioner schooling was their principle was that, yeah, joints need to be mobilized, but they have to be mobilized in a construct of movement while you're moving. If say there's a joint that's been
dynamically moved,
let's say that there's a joint that can't glide a certain way, it's great if you get it to glide that way, but then if you immediately go back to moving and you don't sustain that glide, then there's not a lot of neurologic uptake to that mobilization. And that made a lot of sense to me. And then clinically, the nice thing about that was that Mulligan, it was instantly applicable. Much like PRI, you can retest right afterward, and they can tell you, oh, that doesn't hurt anymore. And it was less about gaining the motion and more about the function that happened immediately. So it was easy for me to say, okay, I think I'll start with that when I get done with PT school, because I can
functionally adaptive.
Yeah. I understand this well enough to say, okay. And Brian Mulligan, kind of the originator of that science, he was so low key and so approachable. He said, hey, you know, if you start here with this particular joint, this kind of diagnosis, start here. But think about what the injury was and try and undo the injury and get them to move through an arc that doesn't hurt anymore. And neuromechanically, see if that doesn't help them out. And a lot of times it does. Yeah. And especially with extremities, it was pretty applicable on the front side.
It sounds like it would just pair fabulously with not only your coming out of PT school background, but then later on the PRI work, obviously. And yeah. I'm just curious, you know, when you think about our start and our background, you know, you can kind of pinpoint that back to patellofemoral instability and issues. Was patellofemoral pain as big or as relevant to that train of thought? You know, obviously with the joint mobilization and end drains and things like that, you would think that they would have some similarities within the patellofemoral pain.
Absolutely. There was one of the mobilizations for, you know, patellofemoral pain had nothing to do with the patella. They did a tibial internal rotation mobilization that was pretty effective for some cases. Yeah. And at the time I didn't understand why, but you know, sometimes that tibia is compensating and it's being used as an excessive rotator, as I'm sure many a privy that discusses that. But sometimes if you did a Mulligan technique, it would give you some patellofemoral relief because you actually change that relationship between that tibia and the femur. So yeah, there was some
awesome
there. Yeah.
Jesse, after, like I said, I'm not sure when, I think you received the certification and became a practitioner through them later on in 2010. But prior to that, walk us through your first clinical experience, and, you know, not even into PRI yet, but just out of school, your first kind of, you know, maybe steady clinical setting where you were there for a longer period of time. It sounds like, and I wasn't aware of your time clinically before graduating, but, you know, I have your information as far as Black Hills Orthopedic and Spine Center. Yep. I know you spent close to 10 years there. And walk us through who some of your mentors were when you were getting started in your career, whether that be, you know, towards the end of schooling or then, you know, as you started your first position. But
sure.
How you ended up where you did, who some of the people that were involved are, and then what really were some of the challenges or what was some of the biggest benefits that you came out with from that first position?
Well, yeah, it's you know, you think about that question, that's a great question. And I'll be relatively brief, but it's hard to include all the people that allowed me to even enter that process. It starts with a lady by the name of Jolene Wilson, who put a good word in for me to a gentleman by the name of Jeff Bonner. Jolene Wilson was a PT who was a friend of my family and knew me as a kid and kind of watched me grow up and spoke to me as a person. And I was trying to get a job in a clinic where I could kind of learn what PT was. And then Jeff Bonner was a great mentor of mine as a human and as a manager and as a PT, all those things. Learned about outpatient physical therapy, learned about, you know, growing up, learned about how this was going to work in, you know, practical sense, and was a, you know, had great hands, was a heck of a practitioner on all fronts, along with folks like Myron Sorstad and Phil and Nancy Bushing and Sonia Anderson, in my original clinic where I worked at a place called Promotion. And that was the place I worked prior to going to grad school. And then I got done with grad school, and a mentor of mine and my manager at the time was a gentleman by the name of Matt Saylors. And, you know, everybody has their strengths. Matt had a photographic memory, so he could test you in ways that a lot of folks can't, and it was good. So he, you know, the didactics were really, he was a great mentor for a guy coming out of school, because he would, you know, he could memorize textbooks functionally. And so you had to know your stuff coming in, and it was a really good review of what I had learned in PT school. And Matt had been at it for a while. And then there was, within that clinic, there was a lady by the name of Laura Bonsness, who was, at the time, I would call her a master clinician. She had been there and seen that and done that from what I knew of PT. Of course, I didn't know what PRI was to a degree, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. I see your question coming up here. But, yeah, those are some of the folks that got me started. And I was at Black Hills Ortho with a great crew, and I had a lot of opportunities to learn, you know, predominantly post-operative care. But as time went on, they challenged me with things that were outside of the post-operative realm. And I became more and more of the what do we do with this? Oh, put it on ham schedule. Yeah. And so there was a number of practitioners that were good friends of mine, and a number of practitioners that helped me grow in that setting.
And was that a large clinic, Jesse, or, you know, as far as orthopedic outpatient post-op, you know, goes, sometimes they're large facilities with a lot of moving people and parts, and you have certain people that specialize in, you know, spinal care and certain people that specialize in lower extremity. Did you guys kind of all take on the entire caseload, or did you guys have certain people that did certain interests?
Yeah, you know, I've historically been of the mindset that if I didn't think I wanted to be able to treat all physical injuries, I shouldn't have been a PT. So yeah, that we had subspecialists who, you know, and I mentioned Laura Bonza, she like to work with spine and back and those kinds of things a little bit more at the time. And then we had folks that were a little bit more focused on certain things, but I worked with a CHT, a certified hand therapist, pretty closely by the name of Pat Pearson. Was another mentor of mine, taught me all sorts of things about the mechanics. And I, you know, he taught me how to make pretty much every outrigger and every splint that you could make with thermoplastic. And then from Pat all the way to, excuse me, to those that would mentor me in lots of different areas. I had a really good kind of a vast and broad exposure to a lot of different things from an orthopedic setting standpoint. So it was really great that I had all those folks. So I was the one that would risk it, and I'd take on
kind of go outside of your own little comfort zone, if you will. But
yeah, and over time, I had enough diversity within that staff that they taught me a lot of different things about a lot of subsets.
Well, and according to my timeline, and again, it's always a little bit up in the air because it's overlapping things, but somewhere around the time of 2006, you would have been first introduced to PRI. And I know based on your first couple courses you took, eventually you guys would host more courses and get some courses to Rapid City. But was it someone within Black Hills Ortho that introduced you to PRI, or talk to us a little bit about who introduced you and where and when that might have occurred?
Yeah, it was actually, I did a half-day clinical my second year in PT school with a guy by the name of Brian Owens. Brian was in a little tiny town in the very southeastern part of South Dakota called Sioux Center, or Dakota Dunes, actually, is what it was. But it's effectively the northern edge of Sioux City, where I saw him for a half day, and he was doing all this crazy stuff with manual techniques, and he had people with balloons and twisting all over the place and standing upside down. And I was like, what is all this stuff?
So nothing you had ever seen before.
No, never even read about it before. And I was just frantically taking notes because he was pretty versed. The guy, he knows his stuff pretty well. And so I still have those notes somewhere. And I remember reading through them again afterward, like, okay, I still have no idea what this is, but I know it's hot. I know it's awesome. And I'll fast forward and then I'll come back to that part of the story. But about a year, about 6 months into when I got done with PT school and started working, I played basketball for like 5 hours one afternoon. Now my age is starting to catch up with me and my pattern is starting to catch up with me, right? And so I played for 5 hours and then went to bed, woke up the next morning, I couldn't move. I was like jacked into a left AIC pattern and didn't have any idea what it was, except I remember thinking, hey, I remember this Brian Owens crazy cat. He had these guys doing this unilateral, like foot on the wall thing. And my left hip is not right. I thought it was my hip, right? Or my back or something. I couldn't stand up. I'm gonna put my left foot on the wall and I'm gonna raise my right foot off the wall and I'm gonna like lay there and breathe. And I got up after that and I could walk away. And so that was about 6 months into practice. So then I was like, okay, what was that again? And I found that and I said, okay, I gotta get to that next, because clearly there's something there that I didn't understand and that was helpful, even though I just had it was a shot in the dark from what I remembered. Yeah. So
I have a quick side story. So I have a good friend of mine who is similar. You know, we're getting to the age where we try to go play basketball and it catches up with you the next day, we'll just say.
Yeah.
And you know, he's the same way, where he loves to play basketball, but he falls into the same extension pattern immediately, either after lifting or after going to play basketball. And so it's so funny because I think I've given him some non-manual techniques probably close to a dozen times now. And, you know, he never wants to use them until that next day after basketball where he hurts. And it's like, right. You know, if you just do this consistently.
Do it a little bit after you play.
Yeah. It always takes like feeling that dysfunction for us to become like more interested in it. So
exactly.
It's funny that basketball worked your way back into it, into your life, and got you on the PRI path again.
Yeah.
So go ahead with after kind of figuring out that, you know, there's something to this, we'll call it repositioning activity, which at the time you probably didn't even know anything
nope.
about.
I had no idea what it was called. And at that point then I had planned out what I was going to do for continuing education. I was going to work through this Mulligan concept and then work through this PRI principle. So see what it was about. Of course, I had no idea what I was getting into, but I thought, okay, I'll learn this stuff first. These two disciplines of PT first. Well, by the time I took my first course in 2006, I already had, my second daughter was born. Jenna had already been born at that time. So I was like new dad, no sleep times two. And
new still relatively new clinician.
New clinician, hadn't really gotten my feet wet. I was probably a year and a half in. And I remember I sat in the front, not in the front row. I always sit like one or two rows back. So you're not right there in the middle. They're not looking
close enough to get picked on or spit on or.
Right. You can't get actually spit on you, but you kind of, you're not in the back either. Right. So I kind of forced myself to be involved. And I remember I mouthed the answer to a question that Ron had. And the reason I mouthed it was because I had no idea what I was talking about. I was just like, I didn't realize that I did it until he saw me. And it was evidently the right answer, but I didn't really know what I was talking about at all. So then for the rest of the course, he's like looking at me as somebody that knows what the heck's going on. And I had no clue what he was doing. So for the rest of that weekend, I was just terrified. I'm like, oh gosh, he's going to ask me a question and I'm not going to have any idea what he's asking.
And from then on, you picked the fifth row instead of the second row.
Yeah. From then on, I tried to hide behind a big guy or something after that. Yeah.
So I think it was Myokinematic, and I think it might have been in Yankton, South Dakota.
Yep.
And that was with Ron, you said?
It was with Ron. Yep. I went with a friend of mine, Nathan Olson.
And was he a Black Hills employee at all, or?
No, Nathan was. He was in my PT class at USD, and so
okay.
we had talked a little bit about it, and both agreed we should check it out. So.
And the only reason I keep mentioning your clinical setting is. It sounds to me like you didn't really have, you were kind of going out on your own limb. You didn't have a whole lot of people surrounding you that were out there with you.
No. So what I did at after a short while, after about the first year or so, I had a lot of courses I wanted to take. And so I was slowly morphed into our clinical director of continuing education, unofficial title that didn't pay, my favorite time. So I ended up drawing clinicians in saying, hey, we should start taking these Mulligan courses and maybe this PRI stuff. And so when Mulligan went relatively well, then PRI started in and we brought in, I think Mike Cantrell taught his first course with us, if I recall. At least I told him I wanted him to. When he was ready to come out, I told him, come on, get out of here. But we had James Anderson in, then we had Mike, then we had Lori. And right after we had Lori, then I was done there. So. It took us a little while to start implementing a little bit, but we had a few clinicians that slowly were coming along. But yeah, I was pretty much on my own, but just kind of making it up out there.
Well, there wasn't
a mentor.
We talked a little bit before this episode, and I'm kind of curious now that you mentioned it, but I hear there's a relatively good story regarding Lori, and maybe that was when she came to teach a course, your first course with Lori. I'm not sure if you want to talk anything about that.
Oh, well, the first course with Lori, and I think I told her this, look, Lori is so with it. Everything is so on point. There's like, she didn't miss anything. And so when she taught that course, it was tight. It was clean. And she was terrifying. Like, she was intimidating. I knew she knew exactly what she was doing. And I didn't even know how the right questions to ask her at the time. Well, fast forward, you all give me a call early 2013, so mid 2013, and Jen's talking to me, says we were considering you, and I at first, if she remembers, my first comment was, you sure you got the right guy? Like, kid, South Dakota, gangly cat, loud, you know who you got? She's like, oh yeah, we know. And so I said, okay, fair enough. So she calls me back, and I had talked to my wife, and I said, yeah, my wife and I agreed this is a good opportunity on multiple fronts, and we'd like to do it. And she said, okay, well, we'd like you to train and teach pelvis. And I still remember that moment. I'm like, I always joke with Lori. She says, well, I'm not intimidating. I'm like, well, you don't mean to be. It's not like you're.
She just knows her stuff.
Yeah, she just knows her stuff. For a PT that doesn't know anything, she's pretty scary.
Yeah. Well, we'll get more into kind of your faculty role here coming up. Before we do that, I know how passionate you are about your current community around you and the people you now work with, and you're setting at what is now called About You Physical Therapy, still in Rapid City.
Yep.
Again, congratulations for our listeners who aren't familiar. Jesse and About You just moved into a new space, and I have the pleasure of, I guess, being maybe your first conference call in a new clinic, but
yeah, today's the first
day. Today is their kind of talk to us about how you became interested in about you. Again, you know, I don't want to be monotonous, but who are some of the people that got you to your current position? You know, how did you know it was kind of time to move on from your old clinical setting? Not that, you know, anything negative, you know, nothing has to be negative or change about that setting. But oftentimes we just, you know, you're at a point in life where you need a change or you need to move on or you want to grow in a certain area. So how did you become involved in your current clinical setting, Jesse, and where does that take you?
Yeah, like it was late 2010, early 2011 that I had a conversation during our what we call pro staff meeting with the therapists up at Ortho. Talked to my boss Matt and kind of the whole team, but also at the time my assistant team manager, which was Laura Bonsness, who's now my partner in this practice, asked them if it would be reasonable if we had a 45 minutes for a session because I was struggling to get a really do a good job with patients from a PRI perspective. If I tested them thoroughly and then treated them to get an effect, and then I was trying to retest, and then if it didn't go perfectly, to re-guide my treatment, I wasn't able to get a good session in. And that, you know, that carried through with Mulligan as well and some other techniques that I was using, but predominantly PRI. And I said, you know, I'd really like to do this. And I went through the metrics and showed them how it would work out. And we'd have to hire some more clinicians, but we'd do a better job for the folks we were working with. And it, you know, as with most things, it was a pretty good sized corporation and they had a pretty good plan for what they wanted to do. And the summary was that just wasn't their business model. Laura and Matt kind of outlined, they just kind of described that to me and I said, okay, fair enough. So that was kind of when I began the concept of, you know, I might have to move on from this setting.
And it's so similar across the board with other, you know, I don't even know at this point if it's really a PRI, I hate to use the word issue, but there's so many clinicians out there that are struggling to get their treatment goals accomplished within 15 minutes.
Yeah.
PTAs are being utilized, you know, some of the BPTs and actual even clinical direct, you know, people that are should be hands-on seeing patients oftentimes are, you know, back at the desk mostly doing paperwork and trying to keep up on all these charges. And at the time, how many, you know, how long was a typical session for you, Jesse?
I had about, you know, 30-minute sessions.
So yeah, which is, you know, even for some people is longer than they get, but still you're like, you know, you're left with, as you mentioned, if I have to retest or if I have to go back and show them new techniques or we have to work longer at this, it just becomes a real, you know, downer, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. And so I was looking for solutions to that. And it just, again, wasn't something that was negative. I just realized I had to honor what their plan was. And therefore, fast forward from that conversation, about 6 months after that, Laura had left for different reasons. But she felt called to open this, with this, what's called About You Physical Therapy. It was just her. And it was kind of an interesting conversation we had. I delivered a table to her, Pilates table, that she was a certified Pilates instructor, and we weren't using it as much in our clinic anymore because she wasn't there. And frankly, I hadn't had a time to mentor with her enough on that. She was pretty solitary at the time. And I delivered this table kind of after hours, and we'd arranged something with my superior at Black Hills Ortho. And well, I was talking to her a little bit about things, and she had hired away one of our clinicians, Katie, at about 9 months after she had left. And so I was joking with her. I told her, if you hire any more of my easily trainable clinicians, I'm gonna steal your daughter. I'll put her right in the mix and I'll have five and nobody knows the difference. We were joking about that. And she says, I have four daughters for those of you listening. And she was, her daughter's pretty good friends with a couple of my daughters. So I was just playing with her. And she said, well, sorry, I didn't know what I didn't know, because she had promised not to hire anybody out of our team. But she said, it didn't make any sense for me not to hire someone who was interested. And I said, okay, fair enough. But she said, if I'd hire anybody else, it'd be you. And I kind of joked with her. I was like, well, I'm pretty content where I'm at, but if you ever need a partner, let me know. So that was kind of where our partnership began, was that conversation. And lo and behold, I finished up with my PRC, and not a few weeks later, she calls me and says, in fact, it was less than 2 weeks, says, "Were you serious about that partner thing?" I said, "Yeah, what do you got?" And so we talked, and I gave my BHO at the time, I gave them as long as they wanted, frankly. I said, I don't want to leave you guys in a lurch. Yeah. I realize I'm one of your clinicians and I don't want you to be in a bad spot. So we left in good terms and ended up starting here in March. And that's been about 7 years ago now.
Awesome. And yeah, I've heard snippets of that story, but I did want to get into a little bit, Jesse, about, you know, I was glancing at these dates and concurrently you were working on your PRC, you know, towards your last years with Black Hills, and then what would be the start of your partnership at About You. It's just funny, as with your entire journey, you've never really pumped the brakes, so to speak, as far as, you know, your time and your commitment to learning and clinical mentorship and direction. But what eventually made you really dedicate yourself to the PRC credential? I know you were the director of continuing education, gifted title without pay, as you mentioned earlier, but
yeah.
What led you to actually dedicate yourself to that eventually? And then, you know, as you mentioned, once you went through with that PRC process, you mentioned then kind of the opportunity to switch roles and become more of a partner and more of a hands-on, you know, clinical, you know, director within About You. But what were some of those experiences like for you while you went through the PRC credentialing?
You know, RJ, PRI is, if you even have a semblance of a grasp as to how to use it, it's just the most effective tool I've ever used. I mean, my analogy in the coursework sometimes is people say it's a tool in the toolbox, and I say, well, yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of tools that I use, but, you know, if I'm going to dig a hole, I'm going to use a diesel backhoe rather than a spoon. So it doesn't mean that I can't use a lot of different tools, but power, you know, the power of a PRI technique when done even moderately well, and I've done them poorly and I've done them relatively well. I don't know if I've ever done them really well yet, but they're very powerful if I'm anywhere close to what they're designed to be. And so, yeah. So I couldn't get away from it. I couldn't stop. You know, there were moments, you know, and we talk about that now in clinic a lot. There's moments when you realize how much of a novice you really are. And I'm fully aware of it, but there's moments when you're really aware of it. And PRI feeds that. And it's kind of frustrating sometimes because you realize how much you're missing. You just don't have time. And like for me, I've got a list of just PRI courses that I still want to take either for the first time or again. And I will never be able to quit it. I know that. I mean, I love that. It's what, let's go to the next kind of question, kind of the next component of that question you asked. How did that end up after the PRC coursework? It was just the most, I mean, for those of you out there know, I'm a pretty spiritual guy. I sound like a hillbilly and I act that way a lot of times, but there's a lot going on in the background, and this PRC course was easily the most fulfilling course I've ever taken because it was so rich and it was so meaningful and it was so thorough on every front. I can't even sit here and describe it to you. All get bored, but
and people, you know, I've talked a lot about the PRC credential with the past faculty in the past episodes. Some of them, you know, even are the PRT route, but Kenny in Japan really was the first one to mention it in this light. The actual, you know, you called it the PRC course, which I actually kind of like, because it's not only a credential, it's actually probably the biggest learning opportunity of any course we offer.
Yeah, I would agree.
The actual credentialing, because the application process and the testing and all of that combined, you know, as Kenny said, it's something that's intended to be more of a learning endeavor than an actual like stamp of approval, if you will.
Yeah. We see if this makes sense to you, RJ. What I describe it as a core competency stamp. Like, you have some pretty good ideas of where we're going with this science, but by no means does it recognize us as masters. It just gives us, like, you all appreciate that we're working at it.
Yeah. And that's another, you know, another big thing for us is when we, you know, we have the Find a Provider page, and we're now over 250 credentialed providers. And one of the things I always get as a question is, well, how do we know if they know what they're talking, you know, how do we know where they're at competency wise? Just because you're a provider, you know, you could be an introductory, you know, you could be a first year athletic trainer within a college athletic setting, or you could be close to retiring, you know, doctor of physical therapy that has had 60 years of experience. And so as you said, the level of competency within the PRC credential, it's not like, hey, this is a stamp of approval saying you've mastered this science. It's more like, no, you've put in the time and the dedication and the awareness of the ongoing dedication to this science that really sets you apart. So it's, as you mentioned, there's no, you know, no two PRCs are alike, but we would hope that by the time you go through that process, you're well aware of the science enough to be able to go out and use it correctly.
Yeah.
And then as you mentioned, it you know, take us through after you did receive that PRC credential. A couple of weeks after, you got a call and were offered this position. Obviously, that was challenging, and you had to then, you know, become more involved with a smaller clinical care. Take us through kind of shortly here, Jesse, as we get into other things when we wrap up, but just spend a short amount of time on the opportunities you've had at About You, what becoming a partner has meant to you, and some of the, you know, there's always struggles within private care and private practice, but some of the, you know, blessings and things that have gotten you and Laura to where you guys are today at a new location.
Yeah, it's interesting. The two of us couldn't have been much different when we began, but yeah, it has been a huge blessing in that there was a lot of things that I wanted to do with my career that involved a little more autonomy than I probably was going to get in a larger institution. It doesn't mean that I couldn't have done it. It just means that I wouldn't have been fleshing out what I was capable of, and I wouldn't have felt right about it. And in this setting, I'm now able to just look at things every day and explore and innovate a little bit, whether that be with the actual, in this case, facility that we developed as a team, or with developing faculty members within our staff that I can appreciate as they grow. Then they're starting to be ready for courses. We tinker with them a little bit, and then they start, like last fall, we all took a course, the new respiration course, and then we have some plans. We built a facility so we can bring people in of our choosing, where we can have kind of well, the goal is first class, kind of an educational setting. And so that's one of the things that was really, that I'm excited about. Of course, I'm out there teaching, and I see some of the things that I'd like to be able to do locally. So that's one of the things that's been exciting, is being able to develop a place where our community can be educated, surely from a movement science standpoint, but also from, you know, from a dietary standpoint, from some other integrative fields. We've got some other clinicians that are writing a little component of our facility now that add to and make the integrated approach to medicine really fun to work with. So it's pretty awesome.
You know, you talk about the differences between working for an organization and then being the organization that is employing others and trying to build this model. It's so cool to not only talk to you, but all of our other PRI faculty and friends and family out there that really are a part of the same journey you are, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's no one right way to integrate all these different professions, depending on who you hire, what their interests are, what the personalities are, what the background is. You know, we have a lot of people that come to Lincoln and learn about integration, and for example, integration through the Prime program or through dentistry, optometry, podiatry. It doesn't necessarily have to be those things. It could be nutrition. It could be psychology. You know, it could be all these other areas that you mentioned. And for you, that's right because of who you have involved with that. So really, it's cool to see and to stay a part of. And again, as before we started, I look forward to seeing where you guys end up and who's involved with what and what therapists are leading kind of those different aspects of that integration. So I look forward to staying kind of in tune with what you guys are doing, but it's all exciting stuff. And again, congratulations on where you guys are today.
Thank you.
Jesse, the last kind of thing I want to end up here with is your role as a faculty member. And that's really the reason for us sitting down today. And, you know, we could have 5 other episodes with you on how you integrate it and who you integrate it with and what your clientele is. But at the end of the day, people really want to get to know you as a faculty member and as part of our PRI family. So I guess the best way to start this question is kind of asking you, you know, you mentioned earlier after Lori had taught you and Jen had reached out to you about possibly becoming interested in teaching, that did happen to be the, you know, at that point, the pelvis restoration course, which would be your first kind of faculty opportunity. But was that something that caught you off guard, Jesse, or take us through kind of where you were at the time? You know, you mentioned earlier that you and your wife thought that it was a great opportunity, which thankfully worked out at the time. But obviously you had new daughters born, you had a clinical transition in life, you had all these things kind of rapidly evolving around you, and how did becoming faculty intertwine with those things?
So I used to, when I was at Black Hills Ortho, we covered weekends at a local surgical hospital. And so those weekends, I was pretty much relegated to going in a couple times a day. It worked out pretty well for family life because I could go in a couple hours in the morning and then hang out during the day and then go in the afternoon. Well, it all works out. I mean, I'm firm. You'll hear me speak to this often. I don't think there's anything that's chance. As soon as I finished up at Ortho, then I had those weekends available. And obviously if I didn't have some weekends available, I was working quite a number of weekends just cause I enjoyed it. And some of it was mandatory. I wouldn't have had the ability to do this role cause it would have been too much. But when those freed up, I actually ended up with a net increase in the number of weekends. And it was something I really enjoyed doing, albeit it was challenging. You know me well enough to know, RJ, that I don't shy away from it. Probably I always kind of lean toward challenges rather than sometimes the wrong ones. But I like to have a challenge or two or seven on the plate somewhere. So it fit me pretty well. The joke was that I wasn't any good at pelvis. I knew it. I'm pretty aware of my weaknesses usually. And as far as PRI was concerned, I didn't have a clue what pelvis was. I understood enough to know that I needed to learn more about it. I'd taken one course, but I wasn't effective with it. I knew I needed to be better at it, et cetera, et cetera. And so that combined with the fact that Lori was so tight and clean with that course, I was like, of course it would be that one. I would start with my weakness. And so it was the best thing for me because, you know, I speak to pelvis now as a mini integration course. That's kind of what I deem it as. And why would I not get good at mini integration course and then go back and really learn myocanon and really learn respiration? And I still work on that today.
So. Well, and I know, I can't remember who it was, but I want to say I had this conversation with Dan about using the faculty training and using the opportunity to teach for the Institute as yet another obvious learning opportunity for you guys.
Undoubtedly.
And as you said, you know, who wants to teach the material that challenges them the most? Well, you flip the coin and it's like, you know, if you're Ron and Jen and the directors, why not have someone learn throughout the process, you know?
Yeah.
Become more self-strengthened with that material as they are also working to teach it. And I think, you know, as I've talked to close to all the faculty now, really it's, I think a lot of people would answer that question the same as you did. You know, I don't think you're ever comfortable with the material. You always think you can do better. And even Lori, as we mentioned, who, you know, you hold such high regard for, and we all do as far as her tightness or confidence with the material, you know, she would sit next to me and say, oh no, I have a lot to learn still.
Oh, of course.
So there's always opportunity. And as you learn to teach it, you probably became more self-satisfactory as you went.
Absolutely.
And I guess, so Jesse, you're still teaching pelvis today. The other, and this isn't, I don't believe I included this in the outline, but if you could briefly mention, I know here about 2, maybe 3 years ago, you guys all worked together to even make this a better course and more integrative. So walk us through a little bit of what it was like to first learn to teach that course and then also be a part of restructuring it and kind of bringing in some new ideas and new material to help strengthen the material.
Yeah, that was really enjoyable. Lori and Jen Poulin, who also teaches pelvis and was one of my mentors with pelvis, and I sat down and worked with Ron and Jen and worked through that course and just gave our input as to things that we thought would be helpful for, you know, and I'm, you know, RJ, you know me well enough to know I'm going to maintain to the best of my ability what I'll call a novice bias. I'm going to try and stick up for the people that just frankly aren't very good at PRI, because I wasn't. And so that was one of the things that I was able to do a little bit in that discussion. And it was really fun. I enjoyed that experience a lot. It was a lot of in-depth things, and a lot of the challenging part of that was I didn't write the course. So
yeah,
to implement things that make sense to me, I had to understand exactly why it was written and what, you know, literally every line was there for a reason. And so if we move that, if we modify, we have to have a reason that's worth modifying. And
these other cascading things that have to be modified because of one modification.
Yeah. And the unintended consequences of the one little change. And
the cool thing at this point is, Jesse, is that, as you mentioned, you know, they were all written, you know, initially by Ron. And as we continue to update and integrate more and conceptualize, and, you know, at this point, every year there's more courses than the previous year that have been taught. So at this point, you know, we talk about pelvis being updated, postural being updated, myokin being updated. The secondaries have all been updated a handful of times. Right now he's working to update impingement and instability, but the cool part about it is the actual, you know, interaction between what you said, you, Jen, and Lori sitting down with him and Jen Platt here on site. At this point, this coursework has really evolved to be a consideration of not just his writing and his theory, but also all of the faculty that teaches it. So you guys each bring something to the table, and maybe a course attendee told you this at this course, and, you know, he wasn't there to hear that. So having all of you guys together working to revise things is such a gift.
Yeah, it's, you know, one of the things that Ron always emphasized was that we have clinical faculty who also teach. And that, you know, I think that allows us then to bring all those clinical repetitions in and do that. That's great. Yep.
Before we wrap up here, I just want to ask, you know, when you are out teaching and, you know, you've had, we'll get into maybe briefly some life events here before we end that caused, you know, some ripples in your schedule and just scheduling in the past couple of years in general. But what's, you know, I know I've heard you and I know you enough to probably answer this, but just for our listeners, what's really the biggest reason you enjoy traveling to teach? I know you would probably would teach 20 more courses if you had the time, but what's, you know, when you go to teach and you walk away from that course, maybe just walk us through some of the most enjoyable pieces of that opportunity, some of the challenging aspects of traveling to teach and staying up to date with the pelvis material. What would you consider the most rewarding about that experience in general?
Yeah, the eyes of the audience. That's my favorite part. And I remind people, don't play me in poker. I have to read eyes every 45 minutes for 15 years, right? Every 30 minutes for the first 9 and a half. I got to see if, I'm in the Midwest. Well, here people are very friendly and they're very kind. And it doesn't mean that they're doing anything wrong, but they'll tell me what I want to hear a lot of times. Not out of purpose. They're not trying to lie, but they'll tell me, oh yeah, I'm getting better. And I'm like, okay, are you really getting better? So then
your
test them out.
Your test scores would say otherwise.
Yeah, I don't think I'm getting anywhere with you. And so I enjoy the audience's eyes when they start off and they're kind of like, yeah, I don't know about this stuff. And then as we walk through it and they start to see it and they feel it, whether that's through lab or whether it's a conversation we had, and they understand that the reason I'm there is because I really do like those people. I mean, I love them and I want them to have the opportunity to grow in the ways that I have. And maybe even a little bit sooner, maybe even a little bit more thoroughly than I did. And so that's why I do it. And when I'm out there, they know that. They know that pretty quickly. And I tell, I'm a little unorthodox. I'm sure you know this. But I tell them right away, like, I don't like y'all as much as my kids or my wife. For sure not my wife. Some days probably as much as my kids. But I love them though. I love them. Yeah. And I want them to do so well with this stuff. I want everybody. I mean, I think everybody should have the opportunity if they're in a physical medicine realm, they should have the opportunity to have at least a novice grasp of PRI and what it can do for their patients or for their referrals. So I just love seeing their eyes come around and look at me with that look that says, uh-oh,
I get it.
Yeah. Uh-oh, I got to learn this stuff. Or, this is awesome. Or, you know, each person responds a little differently, but once they get like, okay, I need to implement this and it's not going to be easy, but I can do this. That's really fun for me. That's probably my favorite part.
Yeah. Jesse, I guess I keep saying this, but just one last question
about
your role as faculty. You mentioned Jen and Lori being big mentors when it comes to the pelvic course and, your faculty training and training under them with that material. I know you would say the same regards about all of our faculty and all of, you know, your mentors within PRI, but is there anyone else within PRI that has really been influential within your faculty development or within your current roles, I guess you would say?
Oh, well, of course I wouldn't be here if I hadn't tried to figure out what Ron was talking about the first day. I mean, and I've told him that he knows that, you know, I probably, you know, that the people that I respect the most, I lean on hardest. And so, I'm always kind of just checking in and leaning on him a little bit. Cause yeah, Ron is, he's a mentor of mentors. There's no way around that. I surely wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Ron boldly working through this information and taking all the shots that the rest of us now don't have to take as much. I can't describe that enough. I don't have time. But also the people that he brings in, my brother-in-law told me once, he says, you know, you surround yourself with really good people. And I said, yeah, you know, I thank you. I appreciate that. That's a really good compliment. And I'll tell you, RJ, you know, you being here is an example of that. You're, you know, Ron does that. And all of you do that. I know that it's not just Ron at this point. All of you guys that are in the Institute surround yourselves with great people that I then get to work with. I'm kind of a tweener between Gen 1, you know, Generation 1 of the faculty and Generation 2. I'm always kind of a tweener, which fits me just fine. But, you know, when I came in and worked with Ron and James and Mike and Lori and Jen Poulin, and then later I remember looking at the eyes of Dan Howlum and Louise Kelly, when they came in, they were looking like I felt just a few years prior. And I was like, nah, you'll be okay. You'll be okay. They brought you for a reason. This is purposeful. Every one of them, be they here before I came or now after I, you know, they come later. Yeah. I have great conversations with each and every one of them. And now
it's fun to be that, I can imagine, I guess it's fun to be that, you know, in the middle of those time frames. You know, as you mentioned, you have the mentorship from some of our earliest faculty, and you can also be there as kind of a testament to some of the newer faculty to say, you know, it'll be okay. You'll be fine. You'll be able to do this.
And we just, the newest, right?
Yeah.
The kid, we just had a good conversation. Dan and Louise and I just had a good conversation with her, and she's going to do great too.
And we look forward to, you know, as time goes on, and we're constantly reminded, and I know your time is not infinite. So as time goes on, to have you and other people be able to be a resource to the newbies, to the newest faculty, and to the newbies in the course room, and to people that are just hearing it for the first time. So beneficial to have you guys with the experience that you do. Jesse, we'll wrap up here in a minute. I want to give the opportunity to talk about some of the other influences in your life. You know, you already mentioned kind of your passion about basketball and sports in general. For our listeners, I don't think you'll mind considering it's on our website, but Jesse, your wife Carrie is at home and helps you with the evolving role of your daughters, Alexa, Jenna, Macy, and Lily. And then I know, what's your dog's name? I know you've got a dog in there.
Oh, yeah, I got Padley. P-A-D-L-E-Y.
Okay. I was going to say, Lily, isn't Lily close to your dog's name?
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah.
Maybe just, you know, I know you guys, you know, most of PRI Nation has followed you guys throughout your past year or so with Jenna's illness and just – the struggles of illness in general are so vast, and it really, whether it's a death or an illness or, you know, whatever, a hospital, it could just be one hospital visit, but you guys have really carried yourselves so, what I would say, you know, everyone else around you proudly, but so unanimously and so unified throughout that. I just want to commend you guys and your strength and being, you know, kind of a symbol of strength for everyone else. You know, maybe a quick update or talk to us about some of those other influences. As I mentioned, you would probably be teaching more courses if you could, but you're so busy starting a clinic and following Jenna's treatment and things like that. But, you know, talk us through any other outside of work influences or what your family means to you and what, you know, what their current status and their interests are.
Yeah. You know, I joke, you know, in a way that makes it more approachable, but, those of you who know me, know that I'm a Jesus freak and, I'm not going to push it on you, but that's, you know, we were tested this last year. We were tested in a way that I wouldn't wish on folks, but, you got to figure out if you believe what you believe sometimes. And we do. And we did. And, that Jesus that I speak of is faithful. And so, we appreciate all you guys praying for us and thinking about us, regardless of your background and your belief system. We absolutely appreciate all the sentiment from PRI Nation and from top to bottom, right to left. You guys were fantastic. We could feel it. We know it. Jenna, for those of you who don't know the details, had what's called T-cell ALL, diagnosed June 4th of last year. And it was a rough, you know, number of months. She didn't do well at all, didn't tolerate some of the treatment, had to look to some things that were still treatment, but a little bit different, a little bit more diverse, a little more integrated. Found oncologists who were able to do that, and it was a little bit of a battle, but she is finishing up her most aggressive phase of treatment this next week, and will be continuing treatment for a number of months, better part of a year or two actually, but it'll be a little less aggressive going forward, kind of a maintenance phase going forward here pretty quick, and that'll be great because we get my wife and my daughter back after functionally being gone for
months.
And
it's not, so, as you mentioned, a year, going past a year now. So
yeah, and so we I know I speak for my wife when I thank each and every one of you guys who is thinking about us and praying for us. But the biggest thing to come out of that is everybody's got their thing. I want everybody to hear that. Everybody's got their thing. It doesn't matter if you think it's not a big deal to you, you know, compared to something else, I disagree. Because as I've watched other people go through things that I couldn't imagine, each and every one of us has our own little thing that we're dealing with. And, you'll have your moments and you'll get through it too. So I appreciate every one of you guys thinking about us and being right there with us. And we'll definitely reciprocate that.
Jesse, I mentioned, you know, you guys, it's just such a great symbol of, you know, your strength and your guys' faith. And as you mentioned, no matter what your beliefs are, we all have, you know, burdens in life that come and go. And you guys aren't finished, and you continue to do it as part of your daily life at this point. So we continue to think about you and Jenna through her treatment and Carrie being gone and really your whole family. What I would rather end on as more of a uplifting note is some of the, you know, what are some of the things that you guys enjoy doing together the most, or even within that treatment, you know, you guys have, as you mentioned, you had a rough year, but being a dad of daughters, and I have a lot to learn from you being a new dad of a daughter upcoming this year, but what are some of the things that you guys really enjoy doing the most as a family? Maybe some of your hobbies, you know, with or without your family.
Yeah.
I know you guys are active in so many areas.
Yeah, so as an uplifting note, Jenna's, just so you guys can appreciate this, Jenna's cancer-free for almost 6 months now, which is a really good thing.
Awesome.
And we're, you know, we're looking forward to doing those family things together again. We've been doing more and more of those. We like to go for bike rides. We like to go for hikes. We like to play silly games from Lightning, a basketball game out with the free throw line, and you keep shooting.
Yeah.
To hacky sack, to what's called ball tag, to board games, to, you know,
all things in between.
Yeah, all things in between. You know, prayer time, and we like to you know, question them a little bit, ask kids questions, so we learn about them, kind of like this conversation. And we're doing a lot of that. We're gonna do a lot of that with the dog, Padley. Padley's back in the mix, and we got all seven now, so it's gonna be pretty awesome going forward.
Speaking from PRI and our extended PRI family. As you mentioned, we all have been thinking of you guys and keeping you guys, you know, in our thoughts. What's cool about it, Jesse, is not just the struggle, but the overcoming of that struggle. And for you guys, like you mentioned, thank goodness that, you know, you had a positive outcome up until this point. Part of that positive outcome is just going through that struggle. You know, we all have, as you mentioned, we all have those in our lives. And as a PT and as a PRI provider, all of the people listening to this have clients and patients that are dealing with those struggles every day they come into your clinic.
Absolutely.
So being able to address where someone is at in life before you address their symptoms or their actual pain or their rehab, you know, my dad likes to say we're all psychologists before we can be clinicians. So again, I appreciate kind of the updates and following along with you guys. Wish you guys the best of luck. Again, wish you the best of luck with your new space in Rapid City, About You Physical Therapy and its kind of new grand opening of its newest location. Please share our regards with your staff there as well and wish
them well.
But again, I really want to thank you, Jesse, for spending time today. I know you're about to see your first client in that new location. And it means a lot for you to take out, you know, an hour of your day and be with us. So hopefully everyone got to know you better. We will list this on your faculty page, on your provider page. Any articles and work that you've done is also listed there. If you guys are looking to follow Jesse or to find him, you can do that through our Find a Provider page as well. His email is listed on the faculty page. I'm sure if any of you wanted any other further contact, you know, like I said, his email is listed there, and Jesse, you're always so gracious to be able to open up your time and even
mentorship or helping answer questions to people out there. So again, thank you for
my all pleasure. That.
Otherwise, thanks for being on, Jesse, and good luck with everything that's to come.
Hey, thank you, RJ. Thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.